G'day everyone and welcome back to the Hardball Gets AFL show, proudly brought to you by our friends at Mazda. It's the complete package inside and out. Drive the brand new Mazda BT50 at your Mazda dealer today. Well, this afternoon, it's the Monday Mad Scramble as we look back on the fallout from a thrilling opening week of finals action. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us and stay tuned to this network for Xavier and Dill tomorrow and the 2 minute warning on Thursday. But for now, let's get into the scramble. Well, we know it's been a tough 2020, and within that, the footy's been tough to follow and watch at times this year, but we could barely have asked for a more exhilarating first week of finals that featured all four games coming down to the last few minutes and three underdogs getting over the line. It was exciting stuff, and we've got a man known to be quite excitable himself with us today to help dissect it all. He is a long-time and award-winning sport reporter at the West Australian, and coming to us from his home of many weeks now at the Gold Coast Hub, his name's Craig O'Donoghue. Thanks so much for joining us, and welcome, Craig. How are you?
Oh, how good's footy, Robbo? What an amazing weekend it was.
What's the latest from the Hub world, mate? We're looking at you over Zoom. It looks like a beautifully sunny day there on the Gold Coast. What's cracking over there in Hubland?
Yes, it is a standard day up here with just the sun out and it looking nice. The main thing in Queensland today is up on the Sunshine Coast with Jake Carlisle at St Kilda has, with no shock, told the club that he will not be playing for the rest of the season. He'll be leaving to go and attend the birth of his third child. His wife, Mel, is due this week. She's currently in New South Wales. But even if he goes into New South Wales, he'll still have a 14-day quarantine to get back into Queensland. So he's done and dusted for the year, which is a shame for him in one way, but great for him in the other way with his wife about to give birth again. Yeah. And Ben Long from St Kilda will challenge his engaging in rough conduct report at the tribunal tonight in the hope of getting off that one match ban.
What's you're a bit of a tribunal and rules expert, Craig. What's your take on Long? Do you think he's got a case to argue there?
I imagine they'll do their best to get it down to low impact. If they can do that, then they can win that case, then he will play. But given the severity of the bump and the danger of breaking someone's jaw when you hit him in the head like that, and his history, given he knocked out Sean Darcy earlier in the year, and got a 3-week ban for that, I think he's going to battle.
Yeah, the Pryors are definitely up against him there. Mates, let's recap some of these finals because we have so much to talk about. As I said, just four terrific finals. Could not have hoped for any better to open the postseason. Want to start with West Coast, the most recent one. They're one and done. It was a little bit like 2016, this one against the Dogs. The Eagles just missing out on a top four spot. Plenty of talk about whether they could make a run at it from outside the four, and then they stumbled while they were taking the first step. Another all-time classic final between West Coast and Essendon. I noted that Luke Shuey and Scott Penderbury after the game said that they should play finals against each other every year, such is the nature of the thrillers that they have. But I'm interested in your takeaways, mate. I mean, for me, one of the biggest surprises was the Pies being able to nullify such a big strength of the Eagles in their height. So I'm talking about Mason Cox with those three big grabs early on against Barris and McGovern. That sort of gave them the buffer and gave them that early confidence. And then Darcy Cameron, the Albany kid, stepping up late, being able to hold his own against Nick Nat in a couple of those crucial ruck contests down the stretch. They're sort of areas where you feel like West Coast would have a big advantage, but for some of those key moments, they didn't. What was your biggest takeaway from Saturday night at Optus?
Yeah, those things that your strengths can sometimes be your weaknesses. And West Coast strengths have always been the centre bounce clearances and the ability to get that ball inside 50 to mark and targets, and their ability to intercept mark in defence. And once you take the intercept marking away from them with Mason Cox clunking everything that came his way, all of a sudden it puts them under a lot of pressure. And we know that West Coast are so brilliant out of the middle with those five goals from the centre bounce clearances, but around the ground they couldn't really do anything else and struggled to score in other ways. So they were relying on the brilliance of someone like Liam Ryan to set things up and the brilliance, of course, of Nick Natanui in the middle. But unfortunately, outside of that, they just couldn't find a way to manufacture scores, and Collingwood were able to shock us with the way they were able to score goals. No one expects Mason Cox to kick three goals in a quarter. No one expected Brody Majicek to kick that goal on the left foot. But when they found different ways to score, which makes them really hard to defend. So unfortunately for West Coast, it really summed up the year that there were so many times where they just didn't play well enough for entire games. They had massive patches. But they'll look back and they'll say we weren't consistent enough throughout the entire season, and we weren't consistent enough in that elimination final.
Yeah, they're fine margins, aren't they? I mean, the Eagles finished one win off third, and that obviously puts you in the top four and on the complete other side of the flag potential equation. And then obviously losing by a point, they weren't far off it. Talk to me about, there was a moment with 30 seconds left when Tom Cole's kick was smothered, and then Jack Crisp had a little handball in inverted quotes, I should say. Do you think that was a throw that might have been picked up? That's something that sort of was picked up in the post game. Do you think that was a fair enough non-call, or do you think that might have been whistled in another game?
It was clearly a throw, undoubtedly a throw. But unfortunately for West Coast fans, where the umpire was, he was never going to see that. There were too many players around the footy from the other side of the ground as well for the other umpire to have seen it. So when your back is to the umpire, you can get away with a little bit more. That's what players have always done. And Jack Crisp certainly got away with that one. Whether or not West Coast could have turned it into a goal afterwards or a score afterwards would have been the issue, because as we've said, they weren't really dominating when going inside 50 from those situations. They were relying on having the 6-6-6 rule to score most of their goals. Mm. So if Collingwood had players back, whether or not they would have been able to turn that free kick into a score would have been really interesting. Would have been great finish to the game, though, the umpire hadn't been able to see that. And yeah. West Coast fans will be saying, as many have texted me, that they got robbed by the umpires throughout the course of the night. I've had that many text messages and phone calls saying we were robbed. It's fair to say I haven't been hearing them in any way.
Yeah. That would have created even more drama, wouldn't it? Sort of 25 seconds left to kick to, you know, 30, 35 metres out to a swarm of about 25 people. What's going to happen? Mate, I want to talk about some of the wash up from the Eagles game. Obviously, talk turns to what's next, what does their list look like next year, how do they get better, etc. One of the big storylines has been the future of Shannon Hearn and Josh Kennedy, which I find from a personal point of view to be quite bizarre. Shannon Hearn was terrific on Saturday night. He's still such a crisp decision maker and executor. And then Josh Kennedy had 7 scoring shots in a shortened game. Surely there's no question that these guys go around again if they want to go around again. Adam Simpson said that he wants them to go around again. Is there anyone out there who's actually thinking that JK or Hearn shouldn't go around again?
I don't think the issue is those two players specifically. I think the issue is West Coast list model and the way it's made up. So those two guys individually, you say, definitely good enough, should go around again. But the age model of their squad isn't going to look like a premiership team next year. If you look back over the last decade, the average number of players in each premiership team who are 29 or over is 5. Now, if you look at what West Coast team would look like, best team next year, on grand final day with players who are 29 or over, you're talking Hearn, Kennedy, Natanui, Shepherd, Shuey, Redden, Darling, Gaff, McGovern and Cripps. And you say, well, they're all in their best 22, but that would mean they would have to create history by having 10 blokes over the age of 29 in a premiership team, which just doesn't happen. It's unheard of. So for West Coast to go forward, they'd be looking at it and saying, everything we're doing with our list model is wrong for premiership teams, but it is also wrong to say Josh Kennedy, Shannon Hearn, just because you're 33, you have to finish. So that's the challenge that they're facing at the moment. They'd be looking and going, how on earth are we going to win a flag with a list model that looks wrong, but how are we going to win a flag if we don't play the players who are our better players as well? So they're in a really difficult bind as they try to work out what their team will look like for next season.
Yeah. I absolutely get that, and I get that you have to have one eye on the future, but when you look at it from an individual point of view, Josh Kennedy absolutely should and will go around next year, and the same will be said of Shannon Hearn. Maybe as a consideration, you find some games where you mix and match a little bit, where you sit Kennedy out for one or two and you see what a new structure looks like up forward, and potentially the same for Hearn down back. But that's going to be very interesting to see what the Eagles do over the off-season.
Which is worth noting, is that no player – there's only 2 players in West Coast history who have played to the age of 34, and that's Drew Petrie and Sam Mitchell.
Yeah.
So these two guys are going to become the oldest players in the club's history by going out there at that sort of age as well. So we see players of that age just fall off the cliff totally all around the league. So that's where the concerns sort of lie, and it's not about how they're playing now, it's what they might look like in the future as things get really tough next season.
Absolutely. Mate, the other Saturday game was St Kilda and the Dogs, and this was an equally thrilling finish. It didn't really look like it sort of early in the last. It looked like St Kilda had done everything they needed to do to wrap this up nicely, but in the end, they let the Dogs back in. Gee, the Saints would have liked to have done it a bit more convincingly and had Paddy Ryder sitting on the bench for the last 5 minutes, but that's easy to say with the benefit of hindsight. What did you like most about what the Saints were able to put out there? There was a bit of pressure leading in. A lot of people were picking the Dogs, even though they'd finished lower. That sort of finals experience. What did you like about what the Saints were able to produce on Saturday?
They were daring. They just took the game on, and they said to the Bulldogs, we're not going to allow you to have stoppages inside 50 where your midfield is just so good with Bontempelli and McRae and Hunter and Dunkley and Liberatore and all these sorts of guys. They said, we're going to make sure that we get the ball out of the defensive 50 as fast as we can, and we're going to be high risk. Some of the things they were doing was just ridiculous. And you don't see it from most teams. They say, no, we'll all play conservative. They played high risk football, got the ball down to their big key position forwards who took 21 contested marks.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, good luck trying to stop them. They just moved it so fast that the Bulldogs midfielders couldn't keep up with them. And we know that the Dogs are small. They're small in attack. They're small in defence. They struggle in the ruck. So they rely on their midfielders to do everything for them. And the Dogs just said, we'll run it away from you. The Saints said they'll run it away from you. I won't give you a chance to do anything with it. And they defended grandly, St Kilda. Obviously, towards the back half of the game, they forgot about that attacking style and they got a bit conservative, which allowed the Bulldogs to just keep on attacking. But I love the way that they took the game on, showed no fear and said, we're going to win this game rather than trying not to lose the game. Because there's a very big difference between trying to win and trying not to lose. And for three quarters, they tried to win. And then for one quarter, they tried not to lose and the Dogs got back in it.
Yeah, I feel like Bradley Hill was a really big part of that. And just looking at his stats now, he only had 12 touches for the day, which kind of surprised me when you look back. But when you talk about that dare and that run and the fact that they just hit the play button, Hill was absolutely the first guy who came to mind sort of using that pace and really sort of taking the game on. And that's why they brought him there, and that's why they, you know, I guess a part of the reason why they have that game style is to cash in on guys like that. As far as the Dogs go, you're right about that. Well, it was at both ends, really. They had that lack of forward potency, and that was an issue for them all season long. Aaron Norton didn't quite look right after that Sean Darcy hit. Josh Bruce kicked an early goal and yanked his jumper and then did very little after that. And then, as you say, giving up those contested marks up the other end. Is the key position stuff still the biggest concern for the Dogs heading into the offseason?
And it has been for 20 years when you look back on it, hasn't it? They tend to recruit the same type of player. They fall in love with a certain type and you go and recruit heaps of them and forget that you've got to go and find someone for them to kick the ball to. So Aaron Norton was obviously the big draft pick a couple of years ago, and Tim English. They've brought in Ryan Gardner. They've brought in Josh Bruce. They've brought in Alex Keith to try to bolster these key position stocks, but they're not the elite key position players that they need, and they're hard to find. They hope Aaron Norton will become one. He's obviously young, and it's hard to expect someone that age to dominate the competition. So he's shown a lot of really good signs. Had the injury-interrupted year. Hopefully, for their sake, he can become that key forward who clunks everything next year with a really strong preseason and no injuries at the start of the year.
Yeah, it didn't help that Zane Cordy went down fairly early in that one as well, in fairness to the Dogs. Brisbane and Richmond, mate, this was a cracker. Most people thought the Tigers would probably get the chocolates here. There are plenty of question marks about Brisbane. Made that fairy tale run last year and then laid a bit of an egg in the finals. But this, for me, was them answering so many of those questions that have sort of hovered around them and around the fact that they could potentially be a legitimate flag chance. Charlie Cameron showed that he can do it in a final and showed that he can do it against good opponents, which he hadn't done to date in season 2020. He kicked three. Oscar McInerney was fantastic in the ruck. He was just about best on ground. And even Stephen Martin in tandem with him, producing better form than we've seen from him this year. And then the school of thought that if you can shut down Lachie Neale, you can potentially take advantage of Brisbane's midfield. It didn't happen that way. Neale obviously lifted after quarter time, but Jared Lyons and Hugh McLuggage and the like really stepped up. What did you see when you're at the Gabba on Friday night about what Brisbane were able to produce?
You talk about question marks. It all started about 30 seconds into the game. Could they kick goals? Was the first question mark.
Yeah.
Would they be able to handle the pressure and actually
kicking
convert, because they haven't done it all year.
Yep.
Daniel Rich kicks the first goal in 30 seconds. Everyone goes, they're up and about.
Yeah, it was a big moment, wasn't it?
Well, Lockie Neal kicked the massive one when there was a 100-metre penalty that went past as well, right on half-time. So they went to half-time, I think it was 7-2, and they've been 2-7 a lot of the time this year. So that answer was just so important. How would they go without Lockie Neal touching the footy? No issues, because as you said, they've got depth there with Jared Lyons and McCluggage playing really good footy. And then Neal comes in and finds the footy himself. And Charlie Cameron, as you also mentioned, who's been quiet for a while since that injury earlier on in the year, kicks the 3 goals and just electrified them. They stood up under pressure. The atmosphere was quite amazing, really. It was this cauldron atmosphere where the fans were up and about and engaged. And it's a massive advantage for Brisbane now playing at the Gabba. They're going to be really hard to beat. If they'll get a similar crowd, you would think, in the prelim, the energy that they're going to get from that if they go through a grand final will be quite amazing. And yeah, they said to Richmond, we're not scared of you. We're going to attack you. And from there, they just took the game on and weren't worried about Dustin Martin either. He started brilliantly and they said, nah, we're not going to worry about you. We're going to play our style of footy. It was really entertaining to watch. They're a really good team and they're going to be hard to beat from here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was looking like an all-time Dusty game. It was looking like he was going to do what he did to them in the finals last year, but then really didn't have that impact in the second half, which was probably the game's biggest surprise. Mate, that note about the atmosphere, I mean, did that sort of give you – you've been to plenty of grand finals at the MCG. Did that sort of give you confidence that we will get a really good spectacle regardless of whether Brisbane are there? As you say, it'll be better for the spectacle if they are there. But do you feel like we're going to get a good spectacle at the Gabba for grand final day given that finals opener up there?
Yeah, we will. What we've all noticed over the past couple of weeks is how loud the venue is.
Yep.
And the locals say it's because of the way the roof is shaped that keeps all of the noise inside the ground. So once the crowd goes nuts, it is just so loud. St Kilda had 1,500 people there a couple of weeks ago in one of their games, and it sounded like there were 20,000 people there. It was so loud. So it's going to be really fun to watch. Everyone's on top of the ground as well, so that'll be good. I think it's going to be a really entertaining grand final. It was dry underfoot, which was the most important thing. We've been all worried about how the condition of the ground is going to be with the dew and things like that. It's changed dramatically in the past couple of weeks, and it's looking dry underfoot again. So that should hopefully not have an impact on grand final day.
So is that a weather thing that you expect? I mean, you're no meteorologist, but is that a weather thing that you expect is going to hang around for the rest of the finals? Now that we've ticked into October and we're later in the year, you think that sort of slippery dew kind of conditions will fade away?
Yeah, the locals have all said that it should be okay underfoot. Great. The biggest issue will be the fact that your hands get slippery because of the amount of sweat you're going to be pouring off you in these sorts of humid conditions as well. So they think that's going to be the bigger problem. But given it's a night game, there's a chance that might not be the biggest factor as well. So we'll have to wait and see how it all goes with the weather up here. But walking on the ground to go to the press conferences throughout the previous few weeks, it had been wet. Like you could see that how wet the grass was just by looking at it. Now you can see how dry it is. So it's made a big difference.
Yeah, well, that bodes well for the remainder of the finals up there as a spectacle for sure. And then going all the way back to Thursday night, mate, quickly with Port and Geelong. I mean, the Power for this one, they really just flipped the switch in the third quarter, looked more daring. There's a couple of Zach Butters moments that come to mind. Tom Rockliffe had that real grunt in the engine room. For me, this was more about the Power being impressive contenders and particularly having that home ground advantage and saluting than it was for the whole Geelong sort of finals failure storyline. I mean, how did you see it?
Yeah, well, same as with the Brisbane game. There were lots of questions around Port Adelaide. Could they handle the pressure? Could they step up against a seasoned team? How are the young guys going to go? And they answered all of those really, really well. Trent McKenzie lined up on Tom Hawkins and everyone said this is going to be a disaster because Hawkins absolutely monstered them earlier on in the year.
Yep.
Hawkins had a fair bit of the footy, but it was always wide and kicked 5 points. Port kicked 9 goals, 4. Geelong kicked 5 goals, 12. So Port took their opportunities and nailed them at every big moment. So Tom Rockliffe was outstanding in his first final with 22 touches and 9 tackles. We saw Wines and Boak continue their great years. Zach Butters, as you mentioned, is just going from strength to strength, and it's just so exciting. And home ground advantage, big crowd, sleeping in your own bed the entire time. Port Adelaide and Brisbane have got a clear advantage over the rest of the competition in hub life. So they're in their own states, and they're up and about. You've got to think it'll be Port Adelaide and Brisbane in the grand final now. Question marks over Joel Selwood this week with his finger, which he broke during the game, the middle knuckle of his middle finger. So there's some issues there for him. And can Geelong stand up in finals? We know, of course, they've got a 4-12 record since the 2011 grand final in finals matches. It's not ideal when you're coming up into a semi-final this weekend against the Pies.
Definitely not. That 2004 grand final rematch looming, Brisbane and Port Adelaide, which would be fitting because Byron Pickett's the man who's giving out the Norm Smith, right?
Wasn't he good that day? He was amazing that
day. Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was a really good point that you raised there. And Ken Hinckley, I think, raised it after the game about Hawkins and where he had his shots from, because you can look at it on paper and go kick 0-5, he still had plenty of opportunities and all the rest of it. But Port were delighted with the fact that they did force him more towards the boundaries, having longer range shots. Certainly didn't give him any cheapies to get on with. Mates, a really quick look at the two finals to come now that we've got set up for this week. Richmond St Kilda just looks like, on paper, the complete opposite of what we had in the first week of the finals. This looks like one of the more one-sided finals that I can remember. Richmond are paying $1.30, and even that's probably overs for me. Just that massive gulf in experience between the two lineups finals-wise. And then the big swing, Tom Lynch comes in potentially for Richmond, and then St Kilda losing Jake Carlisle, as you mentioned earlier in the pod, and then also Paddy Ryder, maybe even Ben Long, who's not quite as an important one. But can you sort of see any way that St Kilda win this, or do you think this gets ugly?
They beat them earlier on in the year by using sheer pace to get away from them. And we know that that's the way St Kilda play their best footy. Richmond have asked for it to be Metricon Stadium because that tends to be ball on the ground a lot more and harder to handle. Whether the weather will have an impact and allow that still to be the case, we'll have to wait and see over here on Gold Coast rather than up at Brisbane. But yeah, when you look at the changes, so Lynch in, Carlisle out, not good.
It's a big
Ryder
swing.
Out, not good. And Ben Long's been really good for them. So it's probably looking at the names to come in for security. I'm thinking Jono Marsh might get a chance for them. Josh Battle and Shane Savage looks like the sorts of guys you bring in for the three guys who would go out. Just doesn't look anywhere near as strong. So it's going to be hard for them. Like Richmond, we know what sort of a talented team they are on paper. We always fall into the trap of saying, oh, the team that won the elimination final is better than the team that loses the qualifying final. And then we say, why on earth are we thinking that after the weekend? So I'll be all on Richmond and expecting them to win by several goals.
Absolutely. And that leads us into the second final. As you say, it's always one winner. It's always a lower-ranked winner against a higher-ranked loser. And there is that seduction where you go, hey, Collingwood, they're up and about, as opposed to Geelong, who suddenly have this finals curse that they can't quite move past. Geelong are $1.71 favourite here. The Pies are $2.05. Do you think they'll have much left in the tank? And on the flip side, do you think that weight of expectation is going to weigh on Geelong, or do you think they'll thrive under that pressure?
This is the really intriguing game of the weekend. I think can Collingwood maintain what they took to West Coast? They've got obviously 2 days less to prepare for that game and travel as part of that. It's a long travel as well up to the Sunshine
Coast.
That's
really big.
And so that's always a challenge for them. But Geelong, we don't know about Joel Selwood with that finger injury. Gary Ablett didn't train today, whether or not that's because he's old or whether or not it's because he's sore. We'll have to wait and see later on in the week. I mentioned West Coast before and how old a list they are. Well, Geelong have got 12 blokes over 29, so it's hard for them at this time of year, and it probably plays into why they struggle a bit in finals late in seasons. Collingwood beat them earlier on in the year. They beat them last year as well. I'm leaning towards Collingwood, but I will also be thinking later on in the week, well, we do know that the qualifying final team versus the elimination final team and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be a really intriguing game. I don't know who it's picking it. If Collingwood play with the same dare they did early and move that ball quickly, then I think they'll win. If either team go into their shell and try to just chip the ball around across half back and be safe, which is what happens normally in Geelong Collingwood games, then I think Geelong will win.
So you've been seduced. You've just spoused the theory that you're not going to get sucked in, and then you just sucked yourself in. Is that right?
Yeah, but Geelong are 4-12 since the 2011 grand final in finals. I looked at today; they're 3-4 in games where they were favourites, and 1-6 in games where it's pretty much even money. So they lose in finals always, which makes them hard to pick. So I don't know what I'll do. This is the impossible way on those ones.
It's gonna be tough. I'm pretty bullish on Geelong for this early in the week. I think Selwood will get up. It'll be really interesting to see what they look like if he's not there. He's never missed a final since he started in 2007. He's played in all 31 of Geelong's finals. And this is incredible. We're doing some quick maths. In that time, there's been 122 total finals, just any team across the entire board. Joel Selwood has played in one out of every four finals even ones that his team haven't been in since the start of 2007, which is just incredible when you think about it. Mate, I want to launch into our regular favourite segment, which is Over Under.
Over? Nah. Under.
And this is basically where I give you a line for a few things and you tell me whether it's going to hit over or whether it's going to hit under. It's pretty self-explanatory. The clue is there in the name. So the first one is Mason Cox goals against Geelong this weekend. Now, I've done the line at 1.5. He kicked 3 in the opening quarter. Didn't quite kick on with it after that. He only had one more kick for the rest of the game. But 1.5 Mason Cox goals for this weekend. Are you going over or are you going under?
Going under on that one. I don't reckon Collingwood and Geelong are going to kick that many goals combined. I reckon it might be an 8-7 sort of match this week. Yep. So I'll give him 1 for the game.
Yeah, okay. So you're not seduced by his past 3 finals, which is 2 in 2018 and the one just gone, a total of 8 and 16 contested marks, standing tall as the tallest man on the ground. You're not seduced by that?
No, I just think the way the teams play against each other is highly defensive. So I think that there'll be a highly defensive game to make it harder for anyone to take a mark inside 50. I think we're going to see a really low-scoring contest this week between these two teams. So in this case, I won't get seduced by him, but if I'm going under.
Okay, I will join you with the under for that one. The Friday night game, I'm going with Dan, a bit of a Dan Butler angle here because we're going to hear a lot about Dan Butler this week, who's thrived at the Saints this year and was sort of getting squeezed out at Richmond towards the end. This is for the Friday night broadcast. 12.5 Dan Butler used to play for Richmond references. Have you got over or under? I thought 12.5. I thought long and hard about this line. You got over or under?
I'm going over by a long, long way. I'm going to say he's going to have about a dozen kicks or a dozen disposals.
And every
each one of those are going to lock in. He'll kick 2 goals. You can lock in 3 mentions for that. It's going to be when it happens in the replay and at halftime. I reckon we're looking at about 30 mentions of it. They'll be going absolutely nuts on the fact that Dan Butler played for St Kilda.
Have I gone way too low on that over-under line?
I reckon people will be loading up if you're a bookmaker. Yeah, I reckon people will be very happy to go to the overs.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm agreeing with you there. We're two for two.
Do we get the post-match as well if they win? Because they'll interview him and then they'll mention that several times as well. So.
As we just discussed, they're not going to win, so that's not a consideration.
It might be 12 before they start.
Yeah, I guess it depends how long the pregame is. We might hit sort of halfway through the first quarter. And, mate, the last one is more a legacy one, given that Geelong went down on the weekend. This is a Patrick Dangerfield one. Patrick Dangerfield, for his career, 0.5 grand final appearances. So he hasn't made one yet. So this is for either this season or the remainder of his career. 0.5 grand final appearances. Will he get to one over under? What do you got?
I'm going under. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say they won't get there this year. I mentioned before the stat about how many older players they have who are 29 or over, more than half their team. I can't see it happening this year. And if it doesn't happen this year, then you've got all the other guys getting older by a year as well. I think he's going to be one of the blokes who look back on and say, geez, he was a good player. And just didn't work out for him as he tried to win a flag or even get through to a grand final. So I reckon he's going to miss out. So I'm going to go under.
Yeah, he's going to be 31 by the time next season starts. I mean, he's still just about at the peak of his powers. A terrific player, but you do worry about that list age profile, as you say. There's only 2 current players with more than his 266 games that haven't been to a grand final. Do you want to take a guess at who those 2 players are? Question without notice.
No, I'm not going to guess.
One from Carlton and one from Melbourne. How's that?
Mark Murphy.
Correct.
Nathan Jones.
That's also correct. And we're not even sure if Nathan Jones. Do we know Nathan Jones is definitely going around again? That might not happen, right?
I don't think we do yet. No, there's been no announcement on Nathan Jones yet. But I'll be going on the unders for him.
Might take the under for Mark Murphy while we're there as well.
Yeah, we'll take the under for Mark Murphy. Absolutely.
Hey, Craig, mate, that's all the time we have. We'll let you get back to chasing yarns in the hub. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll do it again sometime soon. Stay safe.
No worries. Have a good time, everyone.
Thanks, mate. And to our listeners, thanks so much for your company once again. And thank you also to our broadcast partner, Mazda, and the brand new Mazda BT50. It's the complete package inside and out. Drive the brand new Mazda BT50 at your Mazda dealer today. Xavier and Deal will take things over tomorrow. We'll see you again next week for The Scramble. Catch you then.